ओम ज्ञानच निरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. Maitreya told Vidura, O great soul, from Dambha and Maya were born greed and nikriti, or cunning. From their combination came children named Krodha, anger, and Hinsa, envy. And from their combination were born Kali and his sister Durukti, harsh speech. Text 4. Durukto Kalir Adhatta Bhayam Mrityam Cha Sattama Tayoscha Mithunam Jagnye Yatana Nirayastatha. O greatest of all good men, by the combination of Kali and harsh speech were born children named Mrityu, death, and Bhiti, fear. From the combination of Mrityu and Bhiti came children named Yatana, excessive pain, and Niraya, hell. Text 5. Sangrahena Sayakhyata Pratisargas Tavanagha Trishudvaitat Puman Punyam Vidhunotyatmano Malam. My dear Vidura, I have summarily explained the causes of devastation. One who hears this description three times attains piety and washes the sinful contamination from his soul. Purport. The creation takes place on the basis of goodness, but devastation takes place because of irreligion. That is the way of material creation and devastation. Here it is stated that the cause of devastation is adharma, or irreligion. The descendants of irreligion and falsity, born one after another, are bluffing, cheating, greed, cunning, anger, envy, quarrel, that means Kali, who wasn't defined previously, harsh speech, death, fear, severe pain, and hell. All these descendants are described as signs of devastation. If a person is pious and hears about these causes of devastation, he will feel hatred for all these, and that will cause his advancement in a life of piety. Piety refers to the process of cleansing the heart. As recommended by Lord Chaitanya, one has to cleanse the dust from the mirror of the mind, and then advancement on the path of liberation begins. Here also the same process is recommended. Malam means contamination. We should learn to despise all the causes of devastation, beginning from irreligion and cheating, and then we shall be able to make advancement in a life of piety. The possibility of our attaining Krishna consciousness will be easier, and we shall not be subjected to repeated devastation. The present life is repeated, birth and death, but if we seek the path of liberation, we may be saved from repeated suffering. Well, this is quite a list. Irreligion, falsity, bluffing, cheating, greed, cunning, anger, envy, quarrel, harsh speech, death, fear, severe pain, and hell. And that's not all. That's all that's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but in the purport, Prabhupada says this all leads to devastation. And if we're in an atmosphere where all these things are present, we might think that devastation is better. Death is better than life in such an atmosphere. So it all begins with irreligion and falsity, which go together. If there's irreligion, there must be falsity. If there's falsity, there must be irreligion. And then all these other things will follow. Bluffing, cheating, greed, cunning, etc. They must be there. They will follow. Adharma is irreligion. As I was saying, it's not just atheism. And in fact, the worst of dharma is that posing as dharma. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in that essay on Putana, I can't remember exactly the words, but he was saying that the worst form of illusion is this religion, or the most dangerous is religion in the atheism in the garb of religion. He said that the Kamsa and company have captured the pulpits. They're actually against Krishna, but they've taken the position of preachers of religion. So as a preacher of religion, they may speak about peace and love and all these things, but the actual result will be seen. Just like in Christianity, they talk about the Prince of Peace, but as Prabhupada pointed out, that Christianity means the whole history is one of killing. I read a thick book, actually. It was the biggest book non-devotional book I read since joining this movement, The History of Christianity. And I thought it might have discussion about all the different philosophical discussions. Not much. It was mostly a history of torture and murder and wars, and that's the history. It's just all killing, killing, killing. To quote Prabhupada again, he said that killing, killing, killing. The whole Western civilization. Then we see people there, they're saying peace, love. What does it all come to? It comes to killing. And of course, if there's killing and wars, there must be all these other things too: bluffing, cheating, greed, cunning, anger, envy. Well, why is that? In the name of Christ, well, falsity. I'm just giving this as an example. I mean, there are plenty of examples in Hinduism or whatever else you want to call it also. It started on a wrong basis. They wrongly decided that Jesus is the supreme God himself. It's false. And from falsity cannot come anything good. That's why we have to be very careful to understand exactly what is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Philosophy, we use this English word, it's not a very good word in the present age, because the meaning ascribed to it has come to mean an opinion, more or less. Philosophy is supposed to be an understanding of the truth, but it's the atmosphere of Mayavad is such that people think, well, it's just all these all different opinions and you can't come to any conclusion, so you can talk about it if you like, it's intellectual fun, but there's no ultimate conclusion. We have to be careful that in our movement also, because people say, well, there's so many different opinions that, you know, you can choose what you like to do. You can have your own buffet-style Krishna consciousness. You see, this guru says this, okay, I like that. All right, I'll take a bit of that. And this guru says something else, I like that too, so I'll take a bit of that. And no endeavor to understand what is the actual fact. And what happens then, that the Shastra and Prabhupada and it all becomes relativized, because you can interpret it any way you like. Prabhupada said this and different people interpret it in different ways, and therefore it means you can take it any way you like. That means Prabhupada has no authority anymore. So we sing every day. Guru Mukha Padma Bhakya Chite Te Kori Aikya Arna Kori Homone Asha. So it can become a good ritual. If we think like that. But that will come if there's no endeavor to understand Siddhanta. Siddhanta Bale Chitte. Nakaraha Alosh. Iha Hoite Krishna Lage Sudhida Manosh. One should be one should not be lazy in trying to understand Siddhanta, because by not being lazy, in other words, by applying one's intelligence to understand Siddhanta, the mind becomes strongly attached to Krishna. And the other side of that, whatever statement is made can be turned around and in a negative form. Bhakti Siddhanta Sar Thakur gave that Siddhanta Aloschan Anartha Tocharena. Those who are lazy in trying to understand Siddhanta, or what's the actual fact as given by gurus, Shastra Guru Sadhu. Prabhupada said Guru Sadhu Shastra. So those who are lazy, then they don't understand, and then they don't give up anartas, because if we don't understand clearly that Krishna is supreme, we are to serve Him, there's nothing else to do, then we won't have the determination to do so, and we'll find so many other things to do except surrender to Krishna, and that's adharma. So we have to be very attentive to this point. Otherwise, falsity in the name of Shastra, philosophy, it's liable to be preached. And if we're not clear in our understanding, then we'll enter the region of falsity, just like you're telling me this. Someone here was vigorously preaching that there's actually no such thing as a Haituki Kripa, or causeless mercy, even though Shastra always uses this word, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a Haituki Bhakti. That means that one, there's no cause, that one is not performing bhakti for any reason except to please Krishna. No mundane reason. And it also means that bhakti has no mundane cause. It doesn't come into being, it's not a result of any mundane endeavor. That janma koti sukritaya na labhyate. Mundane piety executed in millions of lives doesn't give rise to bhakti. Kurvantya haitu kim bhakti, we have in Bhagavatam. Dharma swanishtita pumsa vishvaksena katasya no pariya no sada savai pumsan parodhama yato bhakti adhokshati ahaitu kiya pati. Definition of bhakti is that it's ahaituki. So ahaituki kripa. This is a principle that we can't earn it. We can't get a certain number of points and then ding, and then the money falls down. And it's not like that. You see, I did Sukriti in my I was a devotee in my previous life, and that's why I've come to bhakti. And this is the Karma monks theory, that I did so much bhakti and now Krishna is obliged to give me bhakti. I chanted 64 rounds for 10 years. Every day I chanted, I stayed awake every night on Ekadashi. and I did so much service, and now Krishna has to give me bhakti. But then Krishna is under our control. He can come under control by bhakti, but the bhakti means to surrender to Krishna. Not that he has to surrender, that I chant 64 rounds for 10 years, come here Krishna, give me bhakti. It doesn't work like that. Then that means it's atheism actually. Kama Mimamsa, they purport to believe in God or to accept him, but they think that he's under the control of our activities. So then where's the bhakti at all? There's no bhakti whatsoever. So it comes to atheism. And it comes to Shastra Ninda, Guru Ninda. But it might sound plausible. There's a word in English, plausible, which means it kind of sounds okay. But it sounds okay means it might be okay, it might not be okay. But then there's another word, what's that? This, I'm not remembering now. This, just specious, that's the word. It means that it seems to be right, but it's completely bogus. It may seem to be correct if you don't go a little deeper. So, but it's bogus. So this is malam, this is contamination. This verse that we read, verse 5, which is not on the board. And if there's going to be a series of verses, because chanted, because there's no purport to the one which is in the next order, it's better to write on the board the verse which is going to be spoken on. I think we talked about that just recently. Didn't we? You got that? It's on the verse to the verse on the board written today is verse 3, but there's no purport. So better to write the next one in order that there will be purport to, and then inform the speaker if he's not aware that the other verses have to be recited. They're all very interesting. How all these bad things, they come from the original sin. Here we have original sin. In Christianity again, there's the concept of original sin. Because someone called Adam, who was wandering around naked, somewhere in, I don't know, Mesopotamia or somewhere like that, he ate an apple. It's not said apple in the Bible, but it's said a fruit, but at least where I'm from, they say apples. Probably Indian Christians say mangoes. Mangoes are a lot better than apples, that's for sure. So he ate an apple, and as a result, there's all the suffering of human society. There's terrorism in Bombay. Blame it on Adam. It was his fault. He ate an apple. It's a silly story. But the principle is that the principle there is that he disobeyed the order of God. Of course, why God should give such a silly order, that's not explained. But then there's not, a lot of things not explained. And that's why you can't expect a very high standard of dharma from a religious process, which is more or less, there's a little something which is correct and a lot of ignorance. And therefore they either ignore the things they don't know, or they just make it up as you go along. So it's not a very good process. If you don't know how to cook, someone says, look, here's the stove and here's the ingredients, and you just kind of make it up as you go along. You're not going to have a very good meal. Or in music, someone says, here's the violin, and this, you go choo-choo-choo like this, and here's the drums, and you go like this, and okay, go, and there you go. That's like a lot of our kirtans in ISKCON. You know, no one's ever trained in anything. And of course, some people, they're not that trainable, it seems. There's inherent lack of musical sense, or congenital, which means from birth, their voice is not that sweet. What can you do? I say leave the singing to those whose voice is better. It's just like, you know, there may be bhakti in the singing, but it's just like someone who doesn't know how to cook. He may have a lot of bhakti, but it's better to let someone else cook who's, they may not have so, well, it's difficult to measure exactly, but maybe, well, I want to cook. I have so much desire to cook for the Lord, but I just can't get it together. Put too much salt, or burn the chapatis, and under, they don't cook the rice enough. So better let someone who can. I mean, the bhakti is the essence, but at the same time, we don't want to give the Lord burned, over-salted, too spicy, etc. preparations. So in the same way, it's probably better to leave the singing to those who their voice is more presentable. At the same time, we're not showmen. Anyway, the point is that do-it-yourself religion, that's not religion, that's adharma. The Shastra gives us knowledge, but then who's going to read all the Shastra and understand? How can you understand it? Even if you do, so what you do, just like if you were, your car needs mending, you could read every single book on mechanics, and you still wouldn't be able to repair your car. We can take it to someone who knows what to do. You have to have some faith that they're knowing what they're doing. The result will be seen in when you take the car back, whether it's going properly or not. So the same thing, dharmasya tat vam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena gata sapanta. Instead of trying to understand everything by ourselves, we should go to someone who's already knows and learn from them. And they may say, well, how do you know he knows? Well, it may be more difficult to understand than from a mechanic, because a car is a very gross instrument. Whereas understanding the nature of the truth, it's very subtle. Dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam. It's very subtle. But if we can find someone who knows the truth and can explain it to us, we can also become tattvadarshi, one who knows the truth. Otherwise, what's the alternative? Do-it-yourself religion. Read through every single philosophy in the world. You can't even do that, because there's one being hatched at every moment. Actually, in everyone's mind, there is. It's an ongoing process. And the result of that will not that we become closer to the truth, we'll become more confused. Just like Tapan Mishra was a bookworm. He was living in East Bengal at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was a bookworm. The word is the same word in Bengali as English. Is it in Tamil? They say bookworm, someone who's always reading books. They say like that. So he was a bookworm, and he was just confused because someone will say, perform sacrifice. Someone else will say, stand on your head, do yoga. Someone else will say, go on pilgrimage to Pushkar. And someone will say, no, you go on pilgrimage, but you have to go to Prayag. Because they're both called Tirtharajas. There are so many Tirtharajas. And someone else will say, no, you should perform austerity. Someone will say, Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost shastra. No, Shiva Puran, Devi Bhagavat, that's the topmost. There will be so many different opinions. Maybe that's one reason why people in the modern age, they like simplified religion. Someone just comes along and says, read the Bible, follow Jesus. Okay. It's just made it easy. Don't think, stop thinking. If you ever start it. So Tapan Mishra, he was reading lots of books and shastras. And he was confused. Then, in a dream, he was told, Nimai Pandit has come close to your home. Go and see him. He'll tell you what to do. Sadhya sadhana tattva bhujite napa. I don't understand. I can't understand what is the goal of life or how to attain it. So what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tell him? Hare nama, hare nama, hare nama eva kevalam kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva gati arandata. Chant Hare Krishna. I said, okay, great. I'll go back with you to Navadvip. He said, no, go to Varanasi. Go there. I'll see you later there. Later, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas. There was no indication of him even taking sannyas at that time. At that time he was married. When he got back, when Nimai Pandit got back to Navadvip, he was, after traveling in East Bengal, he got the news, which he already knew, meaning the Supreme Lord, that his wife had died. And then he married again. And then after that he took sannyas. And he went and met Tapan Mishra and discussed. In Varanasi he discussed with the Mayavadis. Mayavadis are very particular about dharma. They promote in human society dharma, the followers of Shankaracharya. They promote this, that for the ordinary people they must follow dharma. For sannyasis also they must follow sannyas dharma. Everyone should follow their dharma. So Prakashananda Saraswati was challenged Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that you are not following sannyas dharma. This Vedanta part, studying Vedanta, that is the dharma for a sannyasi, not this jumping around the streets, dancing with low-class people. He didn't think it was dharma. So in one sense that's correct, because the Sankirtan movement transcends ordinary dharma. One who chants Hare Krishna, he gives up deha dharma, the dharma of the body, almost literally. He gives up deha dharma means that the dharma connected with the body, in terms one's varna and ashram duties. But one may give even eating and sleeping are the dharma, that's the necessary activities for the body. But one who is highly advanced in Krishna consciousness, he may forget to do that also, like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Nidrahara vihara kadi vijito. They gave up eating, sleeping, and all other bodily activities. Practically they gave it up. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was living at Puri, his servants would feed him, and for him it was just that he apparently wasn't even conscious, and he was eating. It depended on different times. When his devotees from Bengal came, then he would be conscious. But other times he would just like a, he'd be doing it, but his mind would be not thinking of, he wasn't thinking of eating, and all these activities, eating, bathing, he performed all these activities, but his consciousness was like that of a bewildered person. This is very difficult to understand. We don't discuss the ecstasies of Chaitanya, the ecstasy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very much among outside people, because they will misunderstand. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he restrained his ecstasy in the company of outside people because they would misunderstand. And that would be harmful for them. If they misunderstand and think that he's a madman in the ordinary sense, then they'll be offensive to him. Some scholars, they read the descriptions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstasy and they think he must be epileptic. Epileptic. There's a disease called epilepsy. Mrigi rog is the Sanskrit. So, it means you may get a fit and then you'll collapse and be all kind of foam coming out of the mouth. Can die from it also. It's a dangerous disease. So they, because they cannot imagine, or they cannot accept that there is any such thing as a transcendental state, they ascribe material cause to it. So it must be some kind of disease. The mundane scholars are very dangerous people, and especially when they come to, in every field that they touch, when they come to analyzing religion or the ecstasy of the devotees, then they try to ascribe some material cause to it. And they presume that devotees, they're preaching, well, they're calculating. Nityananda Prabhu, he preached among the Shubarna Bonics, the gold merchant community in Saptagram. So he did that because he needs some money, get some money for the institute. So they always calculate like this. So they can't imagine that anyone can actually be pure. Or they may think, well, he's well-intentioned, but no, he's not a scholar like me. He's just confused by this theory that there's some God, and then because of that theory they have some imagined ecstasy and they study. There's this what was his name? William James. He was the first one to see. He made a book called The Psychology of Religion. And his understanding was, he believed in God, but he described God as a mental construct, a mental person. Well, who was that? Not William. I should know. A mental person.
Projection.
Yeah, a mental person. I believe he says, like he's a person, but just in the ethereal. It's not a person without any personality. It's just a mental entity. So, and they have the idea that belief in a personal God, that's all right for people on a lower level. But among scholars of religion, he said this in a lecture to scholars of religion. He said, among us, of course, we know that God is a mental person, but for everyone else, they have to conceive of him as an actual person. adharma. This Hare Krishna, the Jewish rabbi come theologian, surmised that the problem in Western theology, the problem of evil, how does evil come about? If God is good, how does evil come about? If God is all-powerful, then how does He allow bad things to happen? Why do bad things happen to good people? So he surmised that his theology was that God's good, but He's not all-powerful. He wishes us well, and, you know, He's like a nice grandfather or something. He pats you on the head and says, okay, we wish you well, but you can't really do anything to help you. So it's atheism. Atheism in the guise of theism. This Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used these exact words. Atheism in the guise of theism. And in the case of the Rabbi Krishna, he considers himself a theist. Right? This William James considers himself a theist. They presume they believe in God, but they don't know who He is. So how can they even believe in Him? They don't know who He is. It's just they have a word and a concept which is wrong, and they believe in their own falsity. So what does that equal? It's like multiplying. God is great. It's like having a great number and you multiply it by zero. It all comes out to zero. So God is so great and so powerful and so wonderful, but he doesn't really have any personality. So it's like billion, zillion, trillion times zero. They cancel him out. Adharma. And then what can you expect? It's all bad qualities of human society will come in because they're devoid of the mercy, the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord. They don't have any access to it. They don't have access. So this is Kali. Kali is prominent. It's Kali Yoga. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Kali, he's very powerful. He's controlling and no one can escape from his grip. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes with his Madanga and Kartal, then Kali screams in fear. Not with his, what's that, Jambe drum. You know, you didn't find in Chaitanya Leela that they're playing this voodoo drum. That will also come to adharma because it gives a different kind of consciousness. The Madanga is very dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But if we introduce something that's dear to us because we're in the mode of ignorance and we like that kind of sound, then we can't expect that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going to be pleased in the same way. And then so many things might come. So you may think, well, it's a small thing. Yeah, it's a small thing. From one chink. Chink means a small thing. It means a little crack. From a little crack, the whole dam can burst. You know that? The dam is there, a little crack, and then the water starts leaking through, and the pressure makes the crack become bigger, and then eventually the whole thing collapses. So you have to keep straight on the path and know what the path is. The ship. Yeah, the ship may sink. Loose lips sink ships. That's the same. Well, that's a different thing altogether. Yeah. They were on the boat back to Godhead. Nridehama adam sulabam sudur labam pavanisukalpo guru karadham nadharam mayanukulena nabhaspateritam puman virajet puman bhavabding navrajet saatmaha. Lord Krishna states that we have a very good boat, which is the human body. It's a good boat for crossing the ocean of material life. And there's a good captain, the guru. And the instructions of Krishna and Shastra, they're like the favorable winds. So having got all these advantages, if we don't cross the ocean, then we're simply killing ourselves. So don't allow anyone to sabotage the boat. Don't reinterpret the instructions. Throw out the captain, say he's dead, he's senile, he didn't really know what he's doing. That's the story of the old monkey. That's also the Bhaktisiddhanta Swatakur used to tell us. That some monkeys, they were living in the palace of the king. They were kept as pets for the princes, because kings have many wives and then there's many princes. So they used to keep monkeys as just for playing with. So among them there was one monkey who was a little thoughtful. So he thought that, well, there are so many horses in the king's stable which are very valuable. The horses in traditional culture are necessary for, especially for fighting and for pleasure of kings also to go. Fighting, hunting, horses are necessary for kshatriyas. So horses are very valuable. Even today you can buy a horse for, spend a few million dollars for a horse, racehorse. Not the horses that you see in India. They go around, they look like they're, you know, death warmed up. So, this monkey thought that, you see, we monkeys, we're always hanging around the kitchen to get something to eat. And one day, one of the cooks is going to pull a burning log and beat one of the monkeys, and their fur, their hair on their body will catch on fire. Then the stable is just opposite. So they'll go and roll in the hay to get the fire on their body extinguished. Then all the hay will catch on fire. And the stables will burn, and the cure for burns for horses is monkey's fat. So this could happen any time, and it's a very dangerous situation. And he told all the monkeys that we should leave here. It's very dangerous, because sooner or later this is going to happen. But all the young monkeys said, "What are you talking about? We go to the forest again and we have to look for berries and roots, and here we get all nice dainty food. It's a cushy existence." That word is there in English, must have come from the Hindi. Cushy, comfortable life, happy. So the old monkey thought, there's nothing I can do to say. They're telling me I'm senile, I'm old, I don't really know what I'm talking about. He's just some old faggot and some old useless fellow. So the old monkey went to the forest. He left and went to the forest, and after some time he got the news. Everything had happened according to his prediction. One monkey had gone into the kitchen to try to snatch some food, and one cook, the first thing he found, usually they beat with a spoon or something, but he found a He just pulled a log out of the fire and went and beat the monkey, and the monkey caught on fire. He went to the stable and to roll in the hay caught on fire, the stable caught on fire. Half the horses were killed and half of them broke their chains and got out, although they were all burned. And then the king was distressed, and they called his veterinarian, who said that the cure for horses burns is monkey's fat. And so the king said, very good, we have a lot of monkeys here, catch them and kill them all and cure the horses. So the old monkey could simply lament at the demise of all his kinsmen. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the disciples, they may think that, oh no, you know, we know so much, and the guru, he's telling all these things, and he's an old man, nice old man, but you know, doesn't really know what he's talking about, and you know, we don't have to take his advice. So there's nothing the old monkey could do. He saved himself. All right, any question about all this? Hare Krishna. Srimad